Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Do You Remember That Guy? That's right. I'm Jimmy Palumbo, your co-host, alongside
Coach Rick Antonori.
Coach Rick Antonori over there at Clark State Baseball coaching. He thinks he's like Tug McGraw over there. Not Tug McGraw. What's his name? Who's the old Yankee coach in the 30s with Babe Ruth? Casey Stengel. I can't believe I'm making that mistake. Tug McGraw. It's just that Tim McGraw, you're a country artist. But Coach Rick is coaching over there now, which is very exciting. And this is Do You Remember That Guy? And what we do here, it's really a simple show. It's a dopey, simple, fun show. Rick's a Met fan, and I'm a Yankee fan. And what we do is we bring up guys that played after 1975, give or take, that just, if you're a Met fan or a Yankee fan, you're going to remember these guys, but you don't really remember much about them other than what they did. You remember one thing, and you don't know what happened to them. And we find out a lot of funny things about these guys, where they end up. And that's how it goes. So now I'm going to bring up, I'm going to go first, okay?
Go ahead.
Now, my guy, to me, is the poster boy for bad pitching for the Yankees. Okay, now I'm talking about early 80s, all right? This guy played for 11 years in the bigs from 77 to 87, all right? Played for the Yankees from 1983 to 1986 and then played for a cup of coffee in 87 and then finally they told him he's got to go. He played for the Padres, St. Louis, Cincinnati, the Yanks, then the Royals. He only had one winning season. Now, career-wise, he was 67 and 94, ERA of 3.82, he pitched in 434 games, started 162. He has 18 saves. His whip is 1.379. But that's a stat that's for the young kids today. But when I was younger, we didn't know. No one knew. A whip meant something else. He was born in 54, so he's about 10 years older than me. But this guy just pitched at a time that the Yankees were a good hitting team, but they couldn't pitch. And for some reason, like, this was a classic guy. If you just wanted to mock out Yankee pitching, you would just say who's in the game. And he ended up being a long reliever. And he just overall just wasn't he just wasn't that good. But he was a lefty, so he probably could have pitched for 45 years. He just was a journeyman. You know who it is?
Was he a lefty or a righty?
Lefty.
Initials BS?
Yes. How did you get that? Oh, my God. I can't believe you guys know who Bob Shirley is. You really got that?
You want to know why? Because as a Met fan, Keith Hernandez hated hitting against Bob Shirley, and he always brings him up in broadcasts.
Oh, you see? Now, I'm not a Met fan, thank God. And that is unbelievable. I can't believe you guys got that because he's like, well, let me tell you, what he is known for something really, I think, now it's denied by the players involved, but I think as a Yankee fan, he is involved in a monumental controversy not talked about, but I'll get to that in a second. I want to talk a little bit more about our good friend, Bob Shirley. He was drafted by the Dodgers in 72, but he didn't take it because he went to Oklahoma. Then he got drafted by the Giants, but he didn't sign, which is weird to me. Then a couple months later, he got a supplemental draft by the Padres. He went very quickly through the minors, as some of the college kids did back then. And in 77, he wasn't that bad. He was 12 and 18. The Padres sucked back then. He was 12 and 18. He had a 3.7 ERA, and he started 35 games. So, hey, you know, you're in the bigs. You start 35 games. That's pretty cool. In 78, he started out, but he was just so lousy. He went to the bullpen, and he was part of a major trade. I have to read this. He was part of an 11-player trade. That's got to be rare. I don't know what the big number was. He was traded by the San Diego Padres with a player to be named later, Raleigh Fingers and Gene Tennis, to St. Louis for Terry Kennedy, John Littlefield, Al Olmstead, Mike Phillips, Kim Seaman, Steve Swisher, and John Urrea. The San Diego Padres sent Bob Guerin to the St. Louis Cardinals to complete the trade. That is a blockbuster of veteran guys, Raleigh Fingers and Gene Tennis, probably past their prime, and good old Bob Shirley. Now, listen, he was awful with the Cardinals, and they just traded him to St. Louis. Now, his first start with the Yanks in 83, he got shelled. But then two starts later, he pitched a shutout ball, and he had a 5.08 ERA. He was just one of those guys that when you're pitching, it's unfair. If he was on a staff that was really good, you probably would say, oh, you know, Bob Shirley wasn't that bad. But when you have like a bad pit, when even your relievers are not that good, as a fan, now again, I'm coming, you're a coach, I'm coming from a fan point of view. You know, in my mind, the Yankee pitching just, we would score 7 runs and lose 9-7. I mean, it was that kind of thing. Yeah, most of
the time we won like 10-9 games.
Yes. So anybody who pitched in your mind sucked, you know what I mean? But this guy, his stats weren't actually at the end of the day all that bad. But he's famous for doing something in 1987 that I think is I don't even know if you guys know this. All right. In 1987, he was roughhousing with Donnie Baseball Mattingly in the clubhouse, okay, and put Don Mattingly on the disabled list because he injured his back. Now, if you know, and the Yankees cut him like 2 weeks later. Now, if you know anything about Don Mattingly, his back became a career problem and really, I think, is the reason why he's not in the Hall of Fame, because if you take the first 6 years of Mattingly's career, it's really up there with everybody's. But both players, Mattingly and Bob Shirley, deny that. They said Mattingly's back was bothering him because he made a change to his swing. His back was sore, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, the Yankees cut him like a week later because you just don't mess with Mattingly. But so it's possible that Bob Shirley wrestling with Don Mattingly was the reason why that he ended up getting cut. And the ex-Yankees re-signed him a year later. So I guess he didn't really do it. But that's what the...
was when you start going on about, you know, he was a shitty Yankee. He sucked at this. Meanwhile, they're in the major leagues. In
11 years. Of course. That's the...
You do your entire body.
Okay, listen to me. The over and under on me with how long Bob Shirley pitched, I would have said he pitched like 4 years. I can't believe this guy. He made a total of $3 million, according to the websites and stuff, which, you know what, that's about what people were making back then. A journeyman, anyway. He ended up in the Blue Jays system as a pitching coach and a manager in the farm system. You know, he was your classic long reliever on bad Yankee teams. But I can't find anything on him now. I went to try to go to his Facebook page and try to see if he's even teaching pitching anywhere. I can't find anything on him. But listen, he was, a major leaguer for 11 years. And part of Yankees, he wasn't that good. I think if he was a righty, he would have played a season and a half.
If you look at his numbers in the first half of his career, it was all National League. So there's a shred of that you could kind of factor in because the National League is a little bit easier on the numbers. But it's also a classic case of this might be the poster boy for Yankees that are decent until they are players that are decent until they become a New York Yankee and they just can't handle it. Right. Because
I mean, his first year,
he was good for 5 years.
His first year with the Yanks, he was, what am I saying? It wasn't all that bad. I mean, pitched 108 innings. I don't know. Started 17 starts or 18 starts. You know, but ERA was
A full run higher than his previous career high, though.
Listen, you know what's sad? At my age, they have so many different stats now that I can't tell what the hell any of it means. But he played 3 years with the Yanks during a bad Yankee team, and that's my guy, Bob Shirley. If you're at a Yankee game now, sitting and they call the bullpen, and I say to them pretty loudly, oh, are they going to bring in Bob Shirley? You get chuckles from the crowd. So nothing against Bob Shirley's family. If his kids are listening, well, you got to deal with that. Your dad wasn't that good. Just like 35 years from now, if someone's listening to old podcasts and they come across Jimmy Palumbo's podcast, they may go on there and say, well, Jimmy sucked. And I'll have to say I agree, but I said it on the air that we suck, so that's different. All right, so that's my guy, Bob Shirley. When we come back, we are going to hear from Rick Antonori, who his Met is, and we can find out if we can remember that guy. So we'll be right back.
You know, myself and Gooch are both getting a little older. One of the first things to go is your vision. Thank goodness for our hookup over at Absolute Eyewear in Woodbridge, New Jersey, right on Main Street next to the train station. They have glasses for all ages, all budgets. They have safety glasses, sports glasses. They are a full-service powerhouse offering eye exams and even free lenses for the kids. They work with BCBS, AAA, AARP, giving massive discounts. They're open 5 days a week, closed on Wednesdays and Sundays. Call 732-326-3937 to get your first pair of Ray-Ban, Burberry, Coach, Polo, you name it, they got it. Go see Craig and Janine right now.
All right, we are back with Do You Remember That Guy? Now, my guy was Bob Shirley, classic lefty from the Yankees in the early 80s. Not a great pitcher, but 11 years in the bigs. Got to give him that. And part of the Yankees' poor pitching.
I shocked you by guessing who it was.
I know. He got it right. I can't believe that. See, he was, I guess, and I kept on saying how bad he was, and you guessed it. So there you go. Sorry, the Shirley family. I got a friend Shirley who's bigger than you. Honeymooner reference nobody cares about. Anyway, so now, Rick, who do you have?
Okay, so I dug deep, and I went a little special for this show, and I have a little surprise for everybody. But my guy, all right, is a 12-year major leaguer. Pitched for the Mets in two seasons, okay, is up there as for holding like the record for playing for, you know, tied for the record for playing for the most teams.
Okay.
Was a pitcher, relief pitcher.
Righty or lefty?
Righty. Okay. Came to the Mets. The Mets traded Paul Wilson and Jason Tyner in the 2000 season when they went to the World Series against the Yankees.
All right.
Comes in the, you know, the trade deadline, right? Gets in for 22 games. Looking at his stats, the Mets used him, looks like, as a – like a righty specialist, something like that. Because in 22 games, he pitched 28 innings in the 2000 season. All right. In that season, he had a, hold on, let me see it real quick, 3.41 ERA for the Mets. Okay. His overall ERA was 4.45. He had a 42-54 lifetime record in 12 years.
Okay. What was his lifetime ERA? 4.45, you said? Wow. All right. Well, that's, you know. Well, today he'd be making $40 million a year, but back then I'm not so sure that was.
Well, you know how, Jimmy, you know how we have problems at times, like finding out where these guys went after they retired and we can't find anything? Well, you know, I said I'm getting tired of that. So I actually brought my guy into the studio.
Oh, shit. You know this guy? That guy didn't bash him.
It's actually so special to me. Now, where I live, he's baseball royalty, obviously making the major leagues.
So he's sitting right next to you?
He's sitting right next to me. I'll tell you who it is in a second. Now, he went to Kenton Ridge High School in Springfield, went to Paducah Community College.
Oh, he was great in high school, great in college.
I love that, right? Now, this is significant because, as you know, I'm a head coach for a junior college now.
Right.
Okay. Division two. So, man made it from community college, gets drafted.
One of the best players I've ever seen. How am I now gonna discuss this person when he's sitting? I don't even know who it is yet. You could be sitting next to Doc Gooden for all I know. And what if this guy in my, because you know my catchphrase is that this guy, you know, he stinks. And I do that as a fan. So now I'm going to, as soon as you give me the guy's name, I got to look and find out if he stinks. And he's sitting right next to you.
He's sitting right next to me. By the way,
is he big? Is he bigger than me?
Five and maybe you and me put together.
So I can't even kick his ass.
270.
Oh, man. He's like a Rick Russell? I mean, he's laughing in the background. I mean, I just called him a fat bastard. This is great, though. We have a guy. Do you remember that guy? He's sitting next to you. I'm sitting next to Chris Gucci, who was just an average player in high school. This is awful. This is awesome, I mean. How old is this guy?
What?
How old is he? When was he born? He's
the same age as me, 52. He'll be 53 in December.
Okay.
All right. So, I'll give a little bit away. This was a little bit of an easy, you know, invitation because he's also now my pitching coach and assistant coach at the college.
Okay, so not only are you sitting next to him so I can't bash him like we do sometimes these guys, he's actually working with you to teach youth how to play baseball. So if I go on a tear, I can't wait for you to tell me his name. I'll pick out a bad season he had. Now I'm going to ask him, you know what? Who is this guy? Now you got to tell me now. Come on.
You can rip me all you want. I'm fine.
Okay.
I'll take it out of Rick.
I can't. You know what? You know what's hard? You can't really tell by a voice who the guy is. is that Ron Darling? Who is that? Is that?
Gentlemen, I give you Mr. Richard Allen White, known as for the Mets, Rick White, mostly known for 00 or number 44.
Now
played for 11 major league teams.
I totally remember your name. I remember seeing it all the time.
Was on the 2000 World Series team. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rick White.
Hey, Rick. Rick White. Oh, this is so great. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Most of the time we ball break on the show just by, you know, saying how good a guy was. But we do, believe it or not, sometimes we will say if someone's stats aren't great, we'll be like, but this guy was like, his stats weren't great, but he pitched for like, he was good. I remember him. And other times we think a guy was really good, and then we look at his stats, and I'm like, why do I think this guy was really good? I just looked at his stats. He wasn't all that good. You played a long time. Wow, 12 years. You know what I remember? Didn't against the Yankees in the playoffs, you got roughed up one game, didn't you? I remember you getting hit.
All I remember, and believe it or not, I don't remember a lot because I was like really locked in on what was going on.
Right.
But in World Series, Jeter got a broken bat, flip double over Zeal's head at first base.
Okay. It's always a broken bat, huh? Look at you.
That was my worst game against him. I usually hit Jeter when he came up.
Oh, that's great.
times in my career.
So wait a minute. I'm looking. You pitched in World Series against the Yankees, and you pitched in the National League Division Series against St. Louis. You had some decent playoff experience.
Yeah, I was with the Cardinals in 02 when we went to the playoffs there.
Oh, that's cool. Wow, you play on a lot of teams. I have like this, the whole show is going to change now because I want to ask, instead of asking, do you remember that guy questions, I want to ask questions like, that's a good question. What was your favorite team you played for, and what was your favorite, you thought, atmosphere for a ball player to play in of the cities you played in, pitched in?
All right. This has nothing to do with the fact that I'm on this show, but New York obviously was my favorite team because at the time I was with Tampa Bay when I got traded.
Okay. Tampa Bay stunk.
So to go from a last place team, and Tampa at the time was only drawing like 20,000 people, to go to an atmosphere like Shea,
right,
and sold out crowds, being in the postseason,
right,
it was completely electric. It was night and day difference. And then to go back in 2001, I got to learn the city. You know, I'm a small town guy. Got to learn the city, and I lived in New Rochelle.
Okay.
That's
where Lou Gehrig lived, by the way, so it's not a bad choice.
I think that was the best atmosphere. I remember the stadium felt like it was going to fall down.
Yeah.
World Series of the playoffs, it was just shaking so much.
I tell the story. I went to game three, it might have been, the first game at Shea. And I was sitting with my buddy in the mezzanine. And my buddy's like, you know what? Everybody's talking about how loud this place gets. And then Mike Bordick hit a two-run home run. Right. I'm telling you right now, I've been to some cool games in my day. The stadium, actually, I thought the stadium was going to collapse on itself.
Yeah,
I mean, the stadium was literally vibrating. I was like, whoa. And remember, it was, who let the dogs out? I was like, this is absolutely.
You guys were even there that day. Remember, they performed right before the game on top of the dugout.
Yep, it was completely it was completely insane. That was exciting times. I'm glad that was the most nervous I've been as a Yankee fan. You can't lose to the Mets. I never want to play the Mets in a World Series again. But let me ask you also pitched in Colorado. How was that with the ball flying out of the park?
Right.
Did you have a problem with that in Colorado? Did you feel the effects of that?
I don't remember how many home runs I gave up there. I didn't have as much problems with the home runs as I did the fact that my breaking stuff didn't work as good in Colorado as it did everywhere else.
Just like the air, the thin air, just didn't.
Yeah.
Well, that's real, huh? That's a real thing, huh?
First year of the humidor. You know, we had the humidor, and that was like a big controversy, like we were using special balls. I don't even know if that even did anything or not, but. You know, my sinker didn't sink as much. My breaking ball didn't break as much. So I had to learn how to throw a changeup, which actually helped me a little bit later on. But it was definitely a different atmosphere pitching there because, A, you had to jog in from the bullpen because if you tried to run, you were out of breath by the time you got to the mat.
I ski out there, and I always say, and now I know why Denver and the Broncos and the Denver Nuggets and even the Rockies, the reason why they win the games in the fourth quarter is because the other team is out of breath. You can't breathe, so therefore you can't, especially in basketball. Like, the Knicks would be up by like 16 and heading into the fourth quarter and score 3 points in the fourth quarter and lose. Well, listen, I totally understand that because whenever I've gone to Colorado to go ski, I mean, you can't breathe. You can't. It's impossible. So I always laugh. My teams like the Knicks and even the Giants in the fourth quarter of games, the reason why Denver comes back is because the other team can't breathe. And I think when you can't breathe, you have a chance to defeat somebody. They should have boxing matches in 15-round fights in Colorado. See how long everybody lasts. But I got another. Well, let me ask you another question. And you played with. It's kind of cool though. You played with like so many different teams. That's in one way, everybody thinks that's kind of like a lousy thing. Journeyman can't stick anywhere. But I think it's kind of cool now that you're retired and out of the game. I think it's kind of cool that like you got to play in all these. I mean, Cleveland's a cool city, and Pittsburgh, Cincinnati's not a bad baseball time. Philly, you pitched in, and even at the end, Seattle is a nice city. How was that? How was that on your life? Like every year, not knowing where you were going to be.
Towards the end, it got tough. At the beginning, my wife, our kids were really young, right. So she didn't travel that much unless we were near Springfield, Ohio. But as the kids got older, she wanted to travel more. And then when they would come to whatever city I was in, within weeks after it seemed like they got there, I would get traded.
Oh, wow.
I would get put on waivers and then picked up by somebody else. And have to hurt them up, send them back, and then move. So that got kind of monotonous towards the end of my career. If you look, most of that stuff happened from 2000 on.
Right, right. I see that.
And even in 2007, when I hurt my neck, I got a herniated disc of my neck when I was with Houston, and Houston released me when I got healthy, and I was home. I was just home chilling. On 4th of July, Seattle calls me and says, "Hey, look, we're in a playoff contention. Do you think you could pitch the rest of the year?" I said, "I haven't been doing anything but rehabbing my neck." They said, "We'll bring you out to Arizona for a couple weeks." And I went out there, rehab, pitched in the minor leagues for them for 2 weeks. And then they called me up. And I was there for like 2 weeks, I think. And then all of a sudden they called me and they're like, we're going to bring up some younger guys. We're out of contention now. I was like, excuse my language, shit, you could have just left me at home. I was having fun.
Yeah. That's why. Well, I guess they try to bring someone with experience. But once – that's another thing. I'm not going to sit here and ask you how much money you made, but how did that work when you're not a star and you're getting released, and it sounds like you must have had something going on, because whenever you got released, you kind of got picked up soon after.
Righty, according to Wikipedia, he made over $5 million. So I think he's okay.
No, that was the question I was going to ask. Can I borrow some money? No, the question I was going to ask: how did the money work? Like, I obviously had an agent, but did you was each team you went to, did the money remain the same? Was it part of an original contract? Like, how does the when you're a journeyman pitcher for 12 years, how does the contract money thing work?
Okay, so when you first sign in the off season with whatever team I start off with,
right?
So when you go to spring training, that initial team pays your salary, right? So if you get released or designated for assignment and you get picked up by somebody else, that same team still pays you. But if you get traded like I did in 2000,
then the other team pays.
Mets took over my contract.
Okay. Okay.
They paid me the rest of that year, and then they paid me in 2001.
So does your as time goes on and you're on these few different teams like 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, does your so whatever you sign in spring is what your money is for the year pretty much.
Correct. Yeah, you don't renegotiate when you get to a new team. It just finishes out whatever your contract
is. So if you get, like, released from, say, the White Sox, and then you sign with Houston that spring, do you get more money because you have pitched in the league?
What if you clear waivers?
Yeah, what if you clear waivers? That's true, too.
That I think you have to renegotiate. I never cleared waivers.
Oh, so it just gets picked up what you were making.
Three times.
So if you're making $1 a week and you get designated for assignment, the other team picks you up, you get your $1 a week from the original team.
Correct.
Okay.
So if I would have ended up clearing waivers and went down, I still would have made the rest of that money, I believe.
Now, obviously, you made.
I don't know, because it never happened. I always got picked up.
So you made
a lot of those times when I got designated. When I was picked up by a team, it was a team that was actually bringing in a bunch of veteran players at the time going into the year. And then you get into June and July, if you're kind of out of contention or you're not going anywhere and they start cleaning house, that happened to me a lot. That happened to me with the Reds in 2006.
Okay.
You know, we had an all veteran team, but like two or three players. And, you know, I think they designated me on Father's Day, if I remember correctly. It was pretty bad because growing up a Reds fan, I always wanted to play for them. And I finally
got a chance. Oh, man.
And, you know, they put me in some bad situations there too. I was one of those guys that was, I could start, I could be a long man, I could set up, I can close.
Right.
And obviously they had David Weathers closing that year. They had the starters they had. They had Merker and Hammond setting up on the left side. Well, and I can't remember who else, Todd Coffey and some other guys on the right side.
What did your fastball top out at?
Huh?
What was your fastball at those years?
I think towards the end of my career, I was sitting 93 to 97.
Oh, wow. It's pretty hard.
And here's a funny thing that I don't know if you even know. You're probably not even going to find it anywhere. The last game I pitched in was for Seattle against the Yankees.
Oh, wow. And
they had called down to the bullpen and told me to get thrown out of the game if I got called into the game because the home plate umpire at that time was squeezing a younger pitcher that started the game. So they call down. I go in the game. I get ejected on the second pitch.
That's awesome.
I threw a fastball right at Posada's hip, and it came back down the middle, and he called it a ball. So I MF'd him, got thrown out of the game.
Did you look right at him? You walked right towards him?
No, I stood on the mound. This is what's funny. I stood on the mound. I'm MF'ing him, throwing hands at him. He's trying to throw me out. And there was a Japanese catcher for Seattle at the time. I think his name was Kenji Jojima or something like that.
Yeah.
He grabbed a hold of the umpire's arm and wouldn't let him, like, ring me, right? He was, like, trying to throw me out.
Oh, that's great.
Throw me out. He finally gets away and he rings me. So I give him the F-bomb, and I take the ball. I'm still standing on the rubber. I take the ball, and I roll it right down the middle of the plate, right to the – it hits the umpire right in the foot, and then I walk off the field. That was the last game I pitched in.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Now, so your teammates must have loved you, though.
What was that?
Your teammates must have loved you.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I got released the next day. I'm like, well, you told me to do what I did. I did it. And you brought me here for the playoffs. We're not in it. And now you're sending me out for a younger guy.
Now, does that mean – so do you think the umpire knew the guy coming to the game is going to be barking at me?
I felt like he did.
Right. Yes, and now did your manager come out behind you and scream as well or no?
No, because they knew he made a point to just sit in there because they knew what was going on.
Okay, wow.
Here's a nice little thing, Jimmy. That I mean, most people, you know, listening to the show will, if you know, Met fans who watch SNY Network, anytime the SNY shows the 2000 season, no, excuse me, the 2001 season with 9/11. Okay, and they bring up Bobby Valentine, all the stuff Bobby Valentine did, and you know, because Shea Stadium became the hub for supplies.
Right.
Video, okay, a number of times when Bobby Valentine is in the tractor trailer and they're interviewing him, and behind Bobby Valentine is Mr. Rick White.
Oh, that's great. That's right. You were there for, but wait a minute. It brought up, I have so many questions. Well, first of all, you were there for 9/11 and all that stuff. Oh, my God. It was such a shitty time to be living around here. How was that atmosphere? It must have been insane.
To go from the day that it happened, we were all down in the lobby kind of eating breakfast and stuff like that. They were like, we can't tell you a whole lot, but apparently our country's under attack.
Oh,
we need
God.
To get your stuff out of the hotel and be on the bus in less than 30 minutes.
Did your wife call you? They must have been freaking out.
Right before. So they had drove over from Springfield to Pittsburgh. We were in Pittsburgh at the time. So we hurried up and got the kids together. I got in the car. We followed the bus, and we went out into the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania and stayed at like a Motel 8. It was the only thing they can get us into, hidden away from everybody. Out of the city, we're on top of a plateau out there, and we were unloading the bus literally when the jets flew over the top of us just above the hotel to go after that last plane.
Oh my God.
We were like all freaking out, like what's going on? Jets are flying over. We at the time we didn't know those were the planes.
Right. And you felt like you were in the middle of nowhere. So what, you know, wow.
Nowhere. Now there's jets flying over. We must really be under attack. So then everybody just bunkered up in the lobby and watched the TV in the restaurant. And we were sitting there like, you know, are we ever going to, what are we doing? What's this? So they said, everybody go check into your rooms and wait until we tell you what's going on. So I think it was 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock that night. We ended up leaving to go back to New York in the middle of the night on a bus. And we weren't allowed to go anywhere near the city. We had to go I can't remember what the name of the bypass is. It goes to the other side of the river.
Yeah, take the thruway probably over to Queens.
Yeah, know, we had to take a roundabout way, and we could see. I remember being on that bus, and I could see the flame.
Holland Tunnel. You went through the Holland Tunnel.
Whatever. Yeah, they could have took the Tappan Zee. It came around that way, too.
You could see the smoke. You could smell everything.
Brutal. Like,
nobody knew if the season was going to continue, what actually was going on. And they took us back to the Shea. Everybody got in their cars and went home. They said, we'll call you when we find out what's going on. Wow. And I think we sat at home for 3 or 4 days, and then they started telling us that we needed to come in, help unload the semis because they were using Shea as a hub. So we all would go in the mornings and help unload all the semis. And the parking lot was full of supplies. And I think it was a week later, like a week after that initial happening, that we started actually practicing and throwing, and they thought we were going to be able to play. So we kind of – it was like a week to 10 days, I think.
Yeah, 2 weeks later. I was at the first Yankee game. They came back. Wow. That's awesome time. Well, I got another question. And this is, and again, I'm not going to harp on the money, but I'm always curious, like an ex-major leaguers. Like, you obviously made some decent bucks for your major league career, but of course you only made $1 a year in the minor leagues, I'm sure. How did you adjust to after playing? In other words, did you obviously were making good money as compared to someone else working in a cubicle somewhere. Were you able to invest your money, keep a lot of it, or were you in a time? In other words, you hear so many horror stories. Guys make $4, $5, $6 million over a course of 10 or 12 years, and they got nothing to show for it, not even a house. Were you able to, did you have a good support system to invest some of your money? I know you were a young guy when you got released. Were you able to, how did you handle that post-playing career?
The financial part of it wasn't that big of a deal for me because I stayed in Springfield the entire time. Okay. I never moved to a big city, never bought extra houses or cars. Okay.
Which a lot of guys, I'm sure your friends did back then.
Yeah, all of my best friends I grew up with, I still hang out with.
Okay, so that's awesome.
I've always stayed low key, never bought big fancy things. I think the biggest purchase I ever made was a farm down in Kentucky where we went hunting. I bought 400 acres, and then 4 years later, sold it for twice what it was.
Oh wow! Okay.
So, I mean, I'm doing pretty good financially. We put through two kids through college, and I've got a third one in college now.
That's great because I don't think enough people hear. We always hear about, he played in the league. He's a jerk off. He's he's selling carpets on Route 20. It's nice to hear that a guy, and you were not a superstar, so it wasn't like you made $400 million. It's like you made a really nice living for 12 years, and you invested it properly, and you were able to put your kids through school. And I feel bad for you now, though. The tragedy of your life is that you now have to coach with Rick Antonori. I actually think you would have been better off going the Dwight Gooden route and just doing cocaine and blow and having hookers around rather than now have to coach with this, my co-host, which must be dreadful. I tease.
First of all, Rick is an avid hunter. I mean, I went into his basement. There are bucks, deer heads and every other animal on the wall. I mean, avid. He goes with Roy Oswalt and Turk Wendell.
Is good because if Antonori screws me up, I know how to get rid of him. Go hunting with Rick White. Oh, there was a hunting accident. You're not going to believe what happened. And now Rick White is coaching Clark State. How did that happen?
Thank you so much. I love the confidence you give.
Now listen to me now. Now you both you two jackasses are coaching. I want to be able to go online and read some good things about Clark State. I want to see some.
I got to say this. The team, we both said we got to work on the pitching. The team is going to hit and the team is going to field. It's going to be one of those. We just got to see how the pitching goes.
All right. Well, listen, we have to wrap up the show. Rick White, that is. I cannot thank you enough for coming out because you are the first. Do you remember that guy to do a live appearance on our show, which I think is awesome. And maybe we'll try to get someone else to do this someday if we can. I think it's awesome. I hope you like our show. But as an ex-player, are you insulted by how we talk about these players? But I'm a fan. So it's just how you felt as a fan.
I talk about everybody the same way you guys do.
Yeah, that's very funny. But we're definitely going to have you back. Maybe we'll have him a guest when we're talking about someone maybe he played during a similar
he's
year.
He's had a lot of teammates, so maybe we could, you know, be like, well,
yeah, he may know somebody.
With Rick White on the Cardinals in 2001.
Right.
Right, or 2003.
So if we make a connection to you, maybe you can call the guy up and say, do the show with these two jackasses and see what. Yeah,
new show will be 6 degrees of Rick White.
There you go. That's all we care about. But listen, I thank you enough. And so our two guys were Bob Shirley. And now you didn't play Bob Shirley's well before your time. Do you know who Bob Shirley is, Rick? You remember him?
I remember the name.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, that's our show. Bob Shirley and yours truly, Rick White, who's on our show. And maybe I'll just do the show with Rick White next week, and we'll have Rick Antonori on. Do you remember that guy? We'll go real obscure. Anyway, listen, you guys are great. We'll see you next week with another great show. Take care, everybody.